no, no, no. No, no, not again. This is the Tim Burton version.
This is my favorite, second favorite version after the time it wound down and just died.
Well, this is in the neighborhood. What is going on? This is like when people play Dolly Parton out of 45 at 33.
Linoleum knife.
That's okay. I don't get it. Why do I have cassettes from the 1980s that still play, and I make a new one? And I even made a tape that was the same song over and over again, so we wouldn't have to rewind it. So mm-hmm. we weren't just going to be abusing the same section of tape over and over again. What is going on?
Maybe it has a phantasm.
We have a haunted boombox. That's the explanation. Of course, I should have thought of something that rational. Welcome to Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
And...
with a minor key theme song all of a sudden.
It sounds like the scary carnival that comes to town. You know,
something like, wicked this way comes. Like,
don't go to that carnival, kids. Only bad things will happen to you there. The kids are like, no, it'll be great. Look at all those clowns in the fun house. And then they get trapped in the fun house. Yeah.
Oy. I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor for The Wrap and a film critic for What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube.
My name is Dave White. I'm the film critic of Movies.com. Countdown continues.
Welcome.
Almost all of you don't know what that means. It doesn't matter.
We are cheating a little. We're taping this episode early because...
Not very early, a little bit early.
A little bit early.
We gotta go to...
We're
the Duraldis keep making babies. They keep making children. And,
This is the first of the next generation.
Yeah, we're great uncles now.
Yes.
Like, we were...
My nephew and his wife had a baby.
They're the first.
They're the first of my nieces and nephews to have children.
So now we're great uncles. We were great uncles.
Yes, but we're hyphenated great uncles.
Yeah. You know what I hate?
What do you hate, Dave White?
I hate it when gay dudes call themselves gunkles. I don't like that.
Yeah,
it's a little dumb. Much. It just sounds stupid. If you do it, stop doing that. It's dumb. I've decided for you.
However, if you were...
How y'all are going to live your lives.
If you were a gay niece and you want to call yourself a geese, you know, that's kind of funny. But you have to go honk, honk.
It doesn't work if in the direction. Like, if you're a lesbian who's an aunt or an aunt or however you want to say it.
Nobody calls themselves a launt.
No, yeah, it's silly. So...
Moving on.
No movies, really, this week of any...
No, well, because it's the second weekend of Avengers Age of Ultron, and nobody wanted to face that. Except, Pursuit. Because it's Mother's Day weekend, and your mom really wants to
take
see a lady movie.
To see Hot Pursuit. Don't take your mom to see Hot Pursuit. Never take your mom to see Hot Pursuit.
If you love your mother, you will not take her to see this film. Which I haven't seen, actually, but boy, everything I've heard about it indicates... You don't want to take your mother or yourself or anyone else to see this movie.
My mom had such terrible taste in everything.
She would have been down for this?
She would have been okay with this. Like, I swear, back... My mother died in 2012.
Right.
Prior to her death, she lived in a nursing home for 8 years after suffering... a gigantic stroke.
Right.
I'm filling in new people.
Yes.
So I spent those eight years going back and forth to Texas with a fair amount of frequency.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't just an annual visit. This was like...
Every six or eight weeks?
Every 10 to 11 weeks I was flying back to Texas to hang out with her. That's a great thing about being a writer. You can write from anywhere.
True.
So I'd get up every morning, super early, like I always do, and I would go to the Starbucks across the street from her nursing home, and I would write. I would do my work there for like the first 3 hours of the day. Then I would go to the nursing home and spend all day hanging out with her, either in the nursing home or more often, we would go out. We would leave.
Do we think that Starbucks is conspiring to keep there from being internet everywhere?
What do you mean?
Well, like, I've heard people talk about how, in the way that, you know, FDR got electricity to everybody in the U.S., even out to the boonies, the next big push should be that there should be sort of universal internet Wi-Fi.
Everywhere,
there should be internet everywhere. Do we think that Starbucks is trying to, like, hamstring that because they know that people will go to Starbucks just for the internet?
I know someone out there in power is like, how can we make even more money from this and keep it from people and charge them all. Like, that is a thing. I guarantee you that's a thing.
Oh, I'm sure.
Someone is out there hatching a diabolical scheme to, or maybe they've already hatched it. Maybe it is Starbucks.
The people who wanted Comcast to buy Time Warner are probably under all this too.
So, okay. So anyway, then I would go to my mom's nursing home and I would, we would generally, usually go out. Now, in the earlier years of her living there, we would go out a lot, all day, every day, three different places, the museum, shopping, a movie, lunch, like, it was, we packed that day. And she would go back to the nursing home and she'd be, like, tired. As time went on, we started doing, like, thing a day. Because she was just winding. She was winding down. But invariably, no matter what it was, the constant thing was movies.
Right.
We could skip lunch. We could eat lunch. Well, we never skipped lunch. But we could eat lunch at the nursing home. I could bring it in. The mall became too noisy and difficult for her. Uh-huh. It would wear her out in a minute.
Right.
You know, museums became difficult. You know, outdoorsy things became difficult. But the movies were always a constant thing. She always wanted to go see a movie.
You are your mother's son.
Yeah, she always wanted to see a movie. Well, she's why I started going to the movies when I was a tiny, tiny, tiny child anyway. You know, she would take me.
Right.
I don't even remember necessarily asking to go as a very little child. And I mean like 3, 4, 5 years old. I don't remember begging for that. But it became this great thing that she would do. Like, she would take us.
Right.
Me and my little brother. And sometimes just me. Like, sometimes my little brother was like, no, I'm going to stay home and play in the mud. You know, like, because that was his thing. And, but so, you know, she always wanted to see a movie.
Right.
And she would be okay with Hot Pursuit. Because I would always let her pick the movie.
Right.
And I'd lay out the list of possibles, show times. You know, running time, because that sometimes was an issue. Like, if it was really long, there was a bathroom break in the middle. It didn't matter. If I had seen, invariably, I had seen it before.
Right.
Because I would have already reviewed it the week prior.
Yeah.
Or several weeks prior. And if I had seen it before and it was garbage, I would say, all right, I've seen this. I mean, don't worry, I've seen them all before. But I would always kind of withhold my opinion.
Uh-huh.
And I would just say, okay, here we are, here they are, here are the films, you know. And she lost her ability to speak, as you know. So she would point to the ad in the newspaper. This was, Dallas still sometimes has newspaper ads. Or maybe they don't anymore, but they did 10 years
ago. Time.
She would point to the worst of them all. Like, it wouldn't matter. It was as though we were communicating psychically. Like, I was in my head thinking,
don't pick that one.
And she would pick that one. and it always involved, like, who were the movie stars that she knew?
Right.
That was my litmus test. Does she know who this movie star is? We're probably going to go see that movie. She would like this. This movie sucks. And I hate saying this because I'm a huge fan of Reese Witherspoon and of Sofia Vergara.
And it looks like, and it doesn't seem like it would be that hard to make a decent comedy with the two of them.
They,
like,
are both very appealing to me.
They seem like, as a team, as people playing off of each other and being opposites and having bringing different stuff to it, they, on paper, seem like, yes, put these two together in a movie. Just maybe not this movie, I guess.
I agree. Put these two in a movie. Put these two in a movie written by Alexander Payne.
Well, sure.
Put these two in a movie written by
Seth Rogen.
God, anyone. Just anyone who, other than the people who wrote this movie. I don't even know who wrote this movie.
Right.
I'm going to look them up, though.
It's directed by the woman who did The Proposal and The Guilt Trip.
Right. Neither of which are good films.
Not really.
But have their own appeal.
Sure.
In various,
mainly, you know, due to the actors in them.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, here's what happens. Reese Witherspoon is a uptight, you know, high-strung cop.
Mm-hmm.
Which you expect. Reese, sure, Witherspoon. She's playing to type.
Right.
Here. Sofia Vergara is the wife of a drug trafficker who has to be transported from San Antonio to Dallas so that she can testify against the big boss.
Right.
In exchange for witness protection and
immunity.
Well, she's not a criminal. She didn't do anything.
She was a transporter.
She's just the wife.
Oh, she's the wife.
Okay. Yeah. And, okay. She knew about it. She just didn't do anything about it.
I gotcha.
You know, she's Carmela Soprano.
Yeah. I want my spec house.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm moving my
mic. Yeah, stop with the
thunking. I'm sorry, I'm moving my mic. And so, blah, blah, wackiness.
Hmm.
You know, they're being chased by corrupt cops. They're being chased by the drug people. They're being chased by, you know, everybody.
Yeah.
I wanted this to be as fun as I know these women can be.
Yeah.
And there are flashes of that, you know. If you get a chance, you should go watch the Schmoes review of this.
The Schmoes know.
They've been on our show, Christian.
Yes.
And Mark. Mike. Sorry. It's quite early in the morning.
It is.
Anyway, because Ellis, that's Mike's last name, Ellis.
Mark Ellis.
I don't call him Mark, I call him Ellis. Everyone calls him Ellis. Anyway, okay, so Ellis talks about how in the middle of the movie, he turned to Christian and he said, I'm going to go take a... And Christian's like, okay. Because we are a non-swears podcast...
You cannot quote florid language.
I can't quote the great descriptive language that Ellis used to describe what happened in the bathroom versus what happened on screen. But it's quite funny, and you should go watch their clip. There are flashes of goodness. The reason I detoured into the Schmoes is because they both... claim that there is absolutely nothing in this film that is funny at all.
Hmm.
I'm going to give it this. There are moments of screaming, mutual screaming, that I found funny. When they're attached by handcuffs and cannot get away from each other, and they're both climbing over each other, the physical nature of Reese Witherspoon climbing all over Sofia Vergara is... funny.
Well, I remember
it makes me laugh.
Sofia Vergara allowing herself to be a physical gag in the Three Stooges movie.
Yes,
and having fun with that.
Sofia Vergara has perfect timing, and an awareness of herself that is almost evil, because she's taking stereotypes and looking you right in the face and giving you all of it.
Right.
Every stereotype of the Latina woman, you know.
Or Latina.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry. little redundant there. She's giving you all of those stereotypes and winking at you at the same time. She knows exactly what she's doing. She has studied Charo her entire life and is like, I'm going to be that without having to play the guitar. You know, and I think that's actually, she's good at it. She's really good at it. And there's a scene where they're driving a bus together because Reese Witherspoon can't reach the pedals. And they're attached by handcuffs and they're shooting at people and people are shooting at them and they're both screaming. And it really made me laugh. Mm. There's another moment where they have to get out. They have to get away from some bad guys. And Sofia Vergara very patiently explains the entire cycle of menstruation to them to gross them out so that they can get away from the bad guys. And it's this really funny like thing of like, all right, you think of us as just this.
Right.
Well, we're going to use this
yeah.
to get what we want from you or to get away from you. And those two moments actually made me laugh out loud. Everything else is terrible.
And the other 89 minutes.
They are working it hard, though. They are trying to make it happen. And it's not happening.
Yeah.
I want a do-over. I want them in a different movie.
Right.
I think they could be a really great team together. Reese Witherspoon is loosening up in a weird way. I feel like she's doing this now for 20 whatever years, and she realizes maybe she's at this point in her career where it could go in any direction.
Right.
And she wants to go off into unusual places.
Well, yeah, I think perhaps. She just wants to open up her options. And, you know, I mean, let's, you know.
And she's great at comedy because Freeway and Election.
Yeah, those were brilliant comedic performances. But then you think of, like, Four Christmases. You know,
she didn't have anything to do with that.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying it was a comedy that she was in. And this is a comedy that she is in. Yeah. So I'm not saying it's her fault. I'm just saying she could maybe...
She is the producer. So it's kind of her fault.
She could pick better, yeah. Especially if she's also producing. Yeah.
This is the thing. The script has no distinguishing characteristics whatsoever. It's boring by the numbers stuff. And you've seen this movie a million times.
Yeah, it's Midnight Run, basically.
Yeah, and so that's a problem. You needed a better script or one that didn't get... fire hosed down into nothing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Kitty.
The other what? Alonso Durell.
I'm trying to figure out what the connective tissue here is.
I'll tell you what the connective tissue
mismatched
is.
The mismatched buddy comedy. That's what I was going to say. Is the D-Train.
No.
What?
No. 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 No.
No.
No.
No.
Stay.
No.
Stay.
No.
No. It's time for a podcast advertisement.
It is.
You wait up.
Okay.
This is not a podcast advertisement about a mismatched buddy comedy. This is a podcast advertisement about a perfectly matched buddy comedy of furniture.
Mm.
This is a podcast of the cinema being sponsored by furniture.
Yes.
You like furniture.
Not the concept of furniture, specifically being sponsored by
a furniture sales website.
And manufacturer.
And manufacturer. And
namely
RogerandChris.com.
Yes.
We'll post that link on our everything.
Sure.
And if you want to go there right now while you're listening, it's R-O-G-E-R, Roger, A-N-D, and C-H-R-A-S, Chris.
.com.
RogerandChris.com. Roger Hazard of whatever the hell that show used to be called that
Sell
was on
this
TV.
House.
Sell This House. Bless This Mess is what I was thinking.
If there isn't already a show called Bless This Mess.
Pop That Coochie. That was the other thing that I was thinking.
There needs to be a Bless This Mess show.
Come on, ride the train. Ride it. Let me see your Tootsie Roll.
Roger
and other 90s rap.
I was going to say.
Another 90s booty raps.
Yacht Kid K.
Yeah, okay. Sell This House was the show that Roger was on. Chris was not on a show.
No.
But then they became a couple.
Yes.
And then they became a furniture team.
Right.
They have lots of great stuff on their website. This is grown-up furniture for grown-ups.
Yes.
People who want really good stuff in their house.
That will last.
That will last forever and ever and ever.
And that is beautiful.
This is not garbage.
No.
This is real. This is the real deal.
Correct.
I have been asked to talk about their lighting. Now, I touched a little bit on their lighting last time. They got lamps. Guess what? Chris, he makes all these lamps with his hands and some tools.
Probably.
Here are my favorites. I will tell you what my favorites are. I like...
You may have your own favorites, listeners.
But they're not. No, if your favorites don't match mine, then you need to reconsider.
Oh, you stop.
Alto is my favorite. Mm-hmm. It has this beautiful black shade on top of like a brass tripod thing. Isn't that nice? I'm showing you it right now. My other favorite is Scout, which is like a little... Like desk lamp, if you went to a really rad Wes Anderson summer camp.
Yes.
Look at that.
That is nice.
That's like, what's the one, what's the Wes Anderson movie?
Moonrise Kingdom.
Moonrise Kingdom. That's the lamp from Moonrise Kingdom.
I could do that.
Yeah. That's the Scout. And that's currently that is my actual favorite one right now.
Okay.
Because that would look really nice on your desk.
Hmm.
I've kind of been thinking about it.
I see.
Yeah. And my other favorite one is the most novelty-ish one of them. It's called Cranky. And you can adjust the height because X-shaped things that go up and down.
Yes. That.
I'm sure it has a name.
Yes. We don't know what it is.
But I don't know. Okay. So here's what's up. Now you're going to go to this website and you're going to see these lamps, and you're going to go, $250 for a lamp? And to you I say, shut up. Yeah. Because I know you can get one at IKEA for $10.
And it's going to fall apart in 5 minutes.
Fall apart in 5 minutes. And this is a handmade lamp. Handmade with hands. And by a craftsperson named Chris. Now, last year... I'm a big fan, as we discussed in the last podcast, I'm a big fan of lamps.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, I purchased a handmade lamp from a website called The Commons, who we are not advertising for.
I don't even know why you mentioned them, really.
And I spent some money on it, because it was beautiful. And I think, and it's going to last forever. And it's going to look beautiful forever.
And the next handmade you lamp.
And the next handmade lamp
you buy.
I'm probably going to get Scout. This is the Wes Anderson one. Because it's really cool. But anyway, here's what's up. You want a good lamp? You're going to spend some money. Save your lamp dollars. Also, guess what?
You don't have to spend as many lamp dollars.
You don't have to spend as many lamp dollars because you are a listener to this show. If you go buy a lamp from RogerAndChris.com and you use the code word KNIFE.
KNIFE.
KNIFE is your code word. You're going to get 20% off the lamp.
Seriously.
20% off the lamp.
20% off.
So you want to, that's like if the lamp is $250, you're going to get $50 off.
Yeah.
You're going to get a handmade lamp for... As much as it would cost you to, go do something stupid for a night.
Yeah, like...
go out to dinner twice.
Get 2 back-of-the-house tickets to see Mariah Carey in Vegas.
Can we do that when we go?
No, because 2 back-of-the-house tickets cost $200.
I'd rather buy a lamp, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, she's gonna sing Fantasy.
And if there's not a glitter medley, I can't be bothered.
There's not going to be a medley.
If I don't get to hear the song about closure, then I can't be bothered.
The one she writes with DJ Dice psychically in the film. They're both writing the same song simultaneously across the miles.
I gotta hear that. Gotta hear that.
I would want to hear Loverboy.
Though that too.
Because that's the one that goes, baby.
baby. And then, like, giant, you know, foil mylar glitter.
Falls down on her.
Yes.
And the French guy. Okay, so she's not going to do either one of those songs.
No, she's not.
And also, then we would have wasted our money that we could have spent on this lamp.
Exactly.
Which is what we'll
totally
do after we save our own lamp dollars.
There you go.
Because, we have lamp dollars that we have to save if we're going to buy a lamp. But
it'll be worth it.
But it will be worth it, and it'll outlive us both.
There you go.
Yeah. Roger
Heirloom piece.
Yeah. RogerAndChris.com.
Yes. Discount code KNIFE gets you 20% off any lamp on the site.
Yeah. And maybe when we are old and die, we can leave that lamp to a lucky listener.
Yes. Maybe to... I was thinking actually that we would leave it to the baby that we're going to go visit this weekend.
Maybe.
Maybe.
If she earns it.
Sure.
By being great to us.
Yes. If she lets us live in her basement.
RogerAndChris.com. Yes. Okay, so the D-Train.
Yeah. Boy, this movie's trying hard to be...
Mean.
Mean and
condescending.
Yeah.
And unpleasant.
Didn't people
like this movie at a Sundance?
It's lazy subversion. It got kind of mixed at a Sundance.
Oh, I thought I heard that people liked it.
It did okay. It got talked about a lot in relationship to this other movie that's coming out later this year called Overnight with Adam Scott and Taylor Schilling and Jason Schwartzman, because both of them involve straight guys expanding their sexual boundaries.
Let's say. I see.
It's weird that Jack Black and Mike White are both so heavily involved with this film, because you'd think they'd know better.
Well, okay. Talk about what happens.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about Mike White in particular.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jack Black plays this loser who works for some, you know, little tiny consulting company that's run by Jeffrey Tambor, who still can't get behind
whose
the
name
internet.
Jeffrey Tambor's name is
Shermer. Bill Shermer.
Shermer, which is one of several John Hughes references
in the movie.
In the movie.
You know, he's married to Catherine Hahn, they have kids. He's on this organizing committee for his class reunion, for his high school class reunion. He still lives in the same town where he grew up. The other people on the committee don't like him. They go out to have drinks without him. They think he's a pain.
It's never explained what so bad about him.
Yeah, they just think he's a pain, and he's always, you know, he's always calling himself the chairman of the committee, but there isn't one.
He is grasping and desperate for friendship.
Yeah.
And that's off-putting. Sure. I get that. But as at his core, he's really nice.
Yeah, people treat him terribly, and you don't really quite know what he did to deserve that. This committee includes, by the way, Mike White and Kyle Bornheimer and the guy we've been calling not Jim Gaffigan, because we don't know who he is. Anyway, so late one night while flipping through the TV channels, Jack Black sees a Banana Boat sunscreen commercial featuring James Marsden, who was... Oliver Lawless is the character who was in their high school class, and oh my god, he's made it in LA. He's in a commercial. Jack Black becomes obsessed with the idea that if he can get Oliver to attend the high school reunion, that other people will come too, because it'll be such a big deal, because he's this big deal actor now. So he spins this really stupid and complicated lie about getting this company in LA to do business with Jeffrey Tambor's company, and Jeffrey Tambor winds up coming to LA with him, you know, and da da da. So he comes to LA, he finds Oliver, who's not particularly interested in coming to the reunion at all, but they go out and they hang out, and Jack Black is clearly just totally impressed by his life, even though clearly he lives in kind of a crappy apartment. He pretends to know Dermot Mulroney when they see him out in a bar one night, although Mulroney, of course, has no idea who Oliver is, but they talk right. for a bit. And after a wild night of carousing and drinking and drugging, Oliver, who has already proclaimed himself to be someone who doesn't like labels, winds up having sex with Jack Black. So then Jack Black goes home, and meanwhile, like, Jeffrey Tambor has, you know, Oliver has pretended to be the business guy for Jeffrey Tambor, and he was supposed to sort of kibosh the deal, but Jeffrey Tambor sells him so hard on it that Oliver says yes. So now Jack Black goes home, trying to figure out how he's going to, like, get out of this business deal that doesn't exist, sort of mortified by what happened, you know, and kind of doesn't want Oliver to come now because he's afraid people are going to find out about it, but he does, and things get more and more complicated, and Jack Black's character just kind of spirals more and more into this web of lies.
You
get
the whole movie?
No.
Kind of, you are.
And discomfort. No, this is the first half. And they're clearly they're going for sort of a fun, comfortable vibe, because the whole time you're supposed to be sort of ever more sphincter tightening about watching Jack Black try and get out of this mess he's created and wondering when it's all going to come collapsing down around him. It's not all that funny.
It's not all that funny,
unfortunately. So it's uncomfortable, but it's not fun.
And it's mean.
It is very mean spirited and condescending.
This is from the guys who created Alan Gregory, which explains everything.
Yeah. The animated series with Jonah Hill.
That was quite funny, mm-hmm. but also had the same target, and that is every single human being that lives. There is no...
certainly I think you could specifically say regular folks, in
yeah.
quotes.
Yeah.
What awful show business people would call, like, flyover country people.
Yeah, yeah. To me, it plays like a less sophisticated Chuck and Buck.
Much less, yes.
And that was Mike White's, you know...
Big breakthrough
film. The idea of, you know... very uncomfortable homosexuality happening between, you know, two guys, one of whom is disinterested and the other who is smitten.
Right, yeah. When sort of straight guy hero worship turns into, like, actual physical,
yeah.
a physical encounter.
You've got Marsden playing a very casual bisexual character.
Right.
Who's like, yeah, whatever, let's just have sex.
Yeah.
And then they do.
He's an actor.
Yeah. And
as I was like to say about dudes like that, you know, will look at himself in the reflection of any pair of eyes looking back at him.
Right. And Jack Black, as a guy who is so needy for affection, that the first person who came along, who reciprocated, happened to be a woman. You know, so he marries the character played by Catherine Hahn.
Right.
Who's utterly not used very well in this. You
not
know,
really.
Just not... she doesn't have anything funny to do.
Not really.
And she's really funny.
Yeah, she's there to sort of serve the plot.
But you get the idea that one of the reasons that he's obsessed with James Marsden is not... necessarily only because James Marsden was the most popular guy in high school, but because that banana boat commercial has him in swim trunks and nothing else. And Jack Black watches it over and over and over and over again. Why does he watch it over and over again? Well, it might have something to do with that shirtless dude.
True.
In it.
But then he also has that speech about how, like, he went to college, he went to community college down the street, he took the first job he got offered, like, that his life has been so closely circumscribed, and this commercial sort of represents, like...
It does. Where I was going, though...
Oh, sorry.
...was in the clutch, right?
Uh-huh.
When James Marsden pulls him in and is like, all right, we're going to get down.
Mm-hmm.
You can be drunk AF and still know what you're about.
Right.
And be like, oh, hey, I know I'm all, you know, drunk and whatever, but I'm not going to have sex with you right now. I mean, that's there's a gay urban legend that goes around that is mostly false. That's about, you know, get a straight guy drunk and he'll do whatever.
Right.
That's actually not all the way true.
No. Not entirely untrue, but not as true as people think it is.
And so, but Black's character, Dan, he doesn't resist even a little bit.
No.
No, he's right there. He's ready. His desire has been unlocked. The movie never really explores that other than his mortified, you know, aftermath.
Right. But there's still the crush. And there's still, yeah, there's still a weirdly kind of possessive, jealous thing happening all through the rest of the film, you know.
I wish it had been as unnerving and also as...
smart.
As smart and also as emotionally real as Chuck and Buck.
Yeah.
Chuck and Buck is, at its core, this very sad-hearted film.
Yes.
About loss and longing and having to leave people, you know, behind. But this movie is just sort of wants to be, you know, ha ha ha, you're a frustrated bi guy, ha ha,
yeah, or something. Ha. I don't, yeah.
Oh, you've got feelings, ha ha ha. I hate that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a bothersome film.
Yeah.
The longer I watched it, the more I kept checking the time, thinking, "All right, can this just be done? Can we be over with this now?"
Yeah, I kept.
You want to see Jack Black playing gay and unaware of himself being gay?
Bernie. Yes.
You go watch Bernie because that is a perfect performance,
and it's such a great movie
and a great film. Yeah.
Yeah. No, this one I kept thinking that it was going to have something up its sleeve that was smarter than what I was seeing, and it never did.
Yeah. All right. So. Far From the Madding Crowd.
Yes, which we didn't get to last week because Dave hadn't seen it. This week, the movie we're not getting to is Saint Laurent, which we will talk about next week. The second of the two biopics about designer Yves Saint Laurent, produced in the last year.
Yeah.
But yeah, Far From the Madding Crowd, new adaptation directed by Thomas Vinterberg, who did
The Celebration.
And boy, looking at this movie, you would never know that it was from the director of The Celebration.
That is correct.
You could slap this puppy on the BBC right now, and it would just fit right in with...
This would be such a dog whistle on Masterpiece Classic.
Totally.
I know that you weren't a huge fan
of this. Yeah, that's right. We haven't talked about this yet, have we?
Yeah.
I was not. I mean, it's... Do we need to explain what it's about?
We do. I mean, I know we talked about the Julie Christie one.
Right.
A few weeks ago.
Carey Mulligan stars as Bathsheba Everdeen, who is a simple farm girl, except that one day she inherits her uncle's estate and finds herself the object of the affections of three men. Gabriel Oak, a shepherd, played here by Matthias Schenertz? I'm never sure how to say
his name. You know, Christy Lemire posted a thing on Facebook about a sound clip of how you pronounce his name.
Uh-huh.
I had just been calling him Matthias Schenertz because that just seemed easy and likely.
Right.
But the woman pronouncing his name in the sound clip added like seven more vowels. And I don't know.
Like Schenertz or something?
Schenertz. I can't do it.
The bullhead guy.
Yeah.
The shepherd's played by the bullhead guy. A soldier who is played by Tom Sturridge. And then another landowner, an older man played by Michael Sheen. In this telling of the story, which is quite tellingly an hour shorter than the John Schlesinger one, I think that's one of the problems with it.
Yeah.
The movie makes it pretty clear that she is meant to get with the shepherd the whole time.
Yes.
And I think that in doing so, it sort of reduces Bathsheba Everdeen, who's this really fascinating and complex character, to, like, dippy rom-com heroine who doesn't realize that Mr. Right is right there.
I see what you're talking about.
That's my main beef with the movie. And also that it's so standard. Like, Christy was talking, oh, it's so beautiful. I was like,
it is beautiful.
But it's beautiful in a way. It's
gorgeous in that way
that you have seen in
a dozen
other period literary movies.
This is the kind of gorgeous that you really, you want to, like, sort of float around in it.
Yeah,
you know, it's beautiful. Like,
I'm not saying it's ugly. It's just not special. And Vinterberg is such a, when he feels like it, can be such a rule breaker. I was just disappointed at how sort of standard issue the cinematography and the music and a lot of that stuff was. My big problem with the movie, I do think the Schlesinger one at 3 hours is too long, but this one at 2 hours, it felt like every event in the book is smacked up next to each other, and you don't even know how long has passed between each thing because there was such a hurry to get from this fire to that, hay harvest to this sheep washing to that, possible suicide. And, it's like, What was your take?
That sheep washing
is key. I will say this: Bibbs is totally right. Everything that that Carey Mulligan wears in this movie is great.
Yeah,
she looks dynamite.
Christy said the same thing.
Coveting
that leather.
Oh, that red leather riding coat.
That
yeah,
blood red maroony kind of leather riding.
I brought it up in about the flick when we talked about the finale of Daredevil, where he finally wears the costume. I was like, I was reminded of Carey Mulligan's riding jacket.
Well, you know what else she wears in that last bit? The scarf.
Oh yes, right.
The scarf.
That's key to the plot.
That is right around her neck. She's like, I'll get him with this scarf.
Exactly. But I never bought her as farm woman. Like, she's such a China doll.
There's
two scenes where she's doing
more work than Julie Christie did.
But Julie Christie felt more like, tied to the earth. And Carey Mulligan felt like an American girl doll, except British.
American girl doll. Now you're just being a jerk.
I'm just saying, she comes off as too sort of porcelain and refined. There are two scenes where she's actually, like, touching dirt, and she gets the same smudge in the same spot on her cheek. It's ridiculous.
I noticed that, and then I thought, well, it's just the next day. So she's a farm worker and young. It's not like she's just gonna, it's not like there was gonna be a bath that day.
People had washed their face and their basins.
Maybe.
Are you saying the smudge just stayed?
Yeah. The next day she got that smudge. Smudge.
Not buying
didn't
it.
Wash the face, didn't all take right. a bath.
Tell me your dumb opinion.
1870 in the country, in England.
They rinsed the poop off their faces.
Did they?
Yes.
Are you sure about that?
I would put money on it.
I don't know that they did.
Okay, fine. Whatever. The smudge aside,
listening who was alive in 1870, would you please
fill us
let
in?
Us know.
I didn't.
If the poop was washed off your
face. I did not buy her.
At the end of the day.
I did not buy her as a proletariat, as a peasant.
I did.
And the peasants in this movie are also way too well scrubbed.
Their
teeth are all too good. Their clothes
nice
are all
teeth.
Too clean.
They've got clean clothes. All right. A little nitpicking aside there. It's condensed in an efficient way.
Wrong.
I believe it is. I believe it doesn't feel rushed. I also believed in her sort of the action takes place over the course of a few years, two, three, 4 years, more than four or
a
five.
Couple of season cycles.
Yeah, I believe in their long simmering love, especially from his perspective.
He's
so great. Yeah.
He's the best thing in this movie. He elevates her.
Yeah.
Like, I bought her when they were together, and when they weren't, I didn't.
You, I believe, have a Carey Mulligan problem.
I don't think she's as great as people say she is. Oh. She and Felicity Jones, I put in that same category. Like, everybody keeps telling me you're great, and I'm not seeing it.
I liked her in
Education, and that was it.
Every time the camera is on Matthias, I'm just going to call him Skinnerts. I'm not going to go with this.
With the bullhead guy.
Long involved name reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
Every time the camera's on him, he is making eyes. Like, he is giving you face every time. And he's always looking at her. He's always tending her. She's like one of his sheep. The guy who played the soldier?
Terrible.
He was not amazing.
He's not good.
Yeah.
He's not good.
He's, I don't know his name.
Tom Sturridge.
Okay, he was not great.
Yeah, and again, that's part of what...
Kind of a pouty-lipped, you know, pretty person.
So when she's wasting time with him, you're just thinking, Shepard, standing right there.
If you're a lady in the 1870 and then that pouty-lipped pretty man comes along,
you know what?
He can get it.
When that pouty lipped pretty man happens. Was played by Terrence Stamp, it's like, okay, I buy it.
He doesn't even have to be nice or magnetic. He just looks like that.
Yeah, you know,
and he can get it.
You know he's trouble, but he's, you know, rakish or whatever. But this guy is just like borderline foppish, I would say. He's so not charismatic. Again, the movie sort of stacking the deck. For Gabriel Oak, who is named Gabriel Oak,
the Mighty Oak.
Yes.
So, you know, it has some problems, but it's also really pretty to look at, mm-hmm. and it's a love story you can believe because when they are together, you're wanting it for them.
Sure, no question.
And I don't believe it's as well directed as the Schlesinger, mm-hmm. Schlesinger version.
Nor is well shot.
We talked about that when we talked about that DVD, that Blu-ray that just came out. How if it was this big epic, you know, film that Schlesinger was trying to make look and feel very modern,
right?
And he did that.
Yeah,
with Nicholas Roeg as his cinematographer,
mm-hmm.
They created a film that felt like it was pushing you forward and into a new kind of filmmaking. They'd spent the '60s watching the New Wave,
right? They were satisfying the requirements of sort of the big roadshow epic and the New Wave and it's sort of the post New Wave brand of filmmaking at the same time. And again, this just feels like, Masterpiece Classic.
Yeah. But I like Masterpiece Classic, so I had a good time.
Michael Sheen is fine.
Speaking of a movie you want to take your mom to see, this is really the one.
I suppose.
In fact, yesterday when I went to see it at 10 a.m. at the Arclight, there was a young man and his mommy.
Oh.
They were an older lady, and I mean, it might have been a Harold and Maude situation, but I expected it was just a young man taking his mom to the movies, which is what you do when you're nice.
Yes. Take your mom to the movies. And yeah, I certainly take her to Far From the Madding Crowd before taking her to Hot Pursuit. I don't know. I mean, I know I'm in the minority on this one. Like, Ingu says it's one of her favorite films of the year. I just found it really... The things about it that annoyed me a lot. And, but yeah, I totally... Matthias it was great, and he alone for me makes the movie really worthwhile. What's your DVD pick?
The Night They Took Miss Beautiful.
A movie you had never heard of until right before we started taping, and I mentioned it.
I've never seen this film, but oh golly, am I going to watch it. It is a 1977 TV movie.
Yes.
Tell them what it is about.
Some bad people hijack an airplane that is carrying both a bacterium for chemical warfare.
Yeah.
And five beauty pageant finalists.
Competing.
To be.
Perhaps also computing for Miss Beautiful.
Yes.
It's on DVD.
Yeah, it's also on Amazon Prime.
Also on Amazon Prime. And if you're super cheap and a thief, it's also on YouTube.
We're not posting that link.
We are not.
That
may be how we watch it.
We have Amazon Prime.
Is it free?
I don't know.
Amazon Prime, well, then we'll go for
it. Look, if it's $1.99, we'll give them $1.
How am I supposed to buy a lamp from RogerandChris.com if I'm spending all my money?
Piracy is theft. You wouldn't steal a car. You wouldn't.
I might.
You wouldn't steal a purse.
I don't have a need for
people
a purse.
Worked hard on that film, and
did they?
Their art deserves to be paid for. We tell people not to share our special episodes with people who didn't pay for them.
You're right. Okay, I'm sorry.
You know,
I want to know. Look, listen. You know, if we buy
I'm sure the ebook of my Christmas book gets pirated like crazy because yeah, so like, many people want
like
it.
Like crazy. If we pay for this on Amazon Prime,
yes,
I want to know beyond a doubt that Miss Stella Stevens, who is in the film,
gets a check for 2 cents.
Gets a check for a couple pennies out of this. I want that. I want to know that that happens.
I would hope that that is the case. I can't vouch for it either way, but you know, it's think of it that way when you are paying the $1.99 or whatever to Amazon. That you know, because I'm sure Stella Stevens gets a check every month that has.
I won't steal it from you.
A little bit of Poseidon Adventure money in there, and a little bit of Nutty Professor, and a little bit of, you know, who knows what. But you know, this month we'll have a little Night They Took Miss Beautiful.
Maybe it does.
So
okay.
There you go.
I've been taught a lesson about being good.
Yes. Piracy is theft.
You're right.
Support artists and pay for their stuff.
Home taping is killing music.
Also, pay for our stuff. Buy our special episodes. Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife. $1.99 each. A steal. We're about to do What's Up Doc, but right now you can get The Poseidon Adventure, Clue, What's Two for the Road, Josie and the Pussycats, and The Apple. My DVD pick this week is Tamara Drew, which is a movie I've probably made a DVD pick of before, but it is loosely based on Far From the Madding Crowd, so I thought I would bring it up again, especially because Posey Simmons, who did the original graphic novel of this, also did one called Gemma Bovary, which is the movie of which is about to come out in a few weeks, and I'll be talking about that when it does, with the same star, Gemma Arterton. Anyway, Tamara Drew is directed by Stephen Frears. It's set in Hardy Country, and it's about a young woman who turns the head of three different men, and one of whom happens to be a Hardy scholar. And so they sort of acknowledge that Far From the Madding Crowd is a story that exists, but they are nonetheless sort of recreating it anyway. Features a great, great, wonderful supporting performance by Tamsin Grieg. This is the movie that made me that introduced me to her, and I adore her. She's on Showtime's episodes now. But anyway, yeah, Tamara Drew, love it. If you haven't seen it, Dave and I have probably argued about it on the show before, but I'm still a fan. Check it out.
Didn't like it.
Letters?
Ain't got none. Do you have any something?
Oh,
you
know what? I bet I do, and I have, because we're doing this so early, I didn't forward them to you yet. All right, hang on. One moment, please. Any letters, Dave?
Hello, Dave and Alonzo. I am sending this in again. I originally wrote this 2 weeks ago. On the latest podcast, you mentioned that you had no letters left. Oh, this is one I lost. Original. Here's the original letter.
Great.
I've written it a few times before. We know this is Patrick who listens, and we know who this person is. I am finishing up my last semester of high school.
Hey now.
And we'll be heading to mortuary school next year. I approve.
Rock out. You'll have an actual skill. None of us do.
I have been listening to you guys for a couple of years now and have not missed an episode.
Wow.
I've listed my top 25 of all time below in hope that you would knife it. Now, this is 2.5 times what you're supposed to do.
Yes.
You've gone above and beyond. We are not an AP class, but we're going to do this. We're going to read all 25. Thank you for the hours of listening entertainment. Countless film recommendations. I'm eagerly looking forward to Linoleum Knife Premium.
Coming soon.
Yeah, it's coming soon. That's part of the countdown.
Yes.
Here we go. From 25th to
number one.
To number one.
Counting down to number one.
Okay. First of all, I'm scanning this list. I'll just say right now, this is 100% Knife.
Let's do the list. Come on.
This is 100% knife. I'm going to read the 25, and you're going to agree. You don't even have to say yes or no to these.
You don't speak for me.
I do, though, and I've seen more of these than you have, I think. Look.
Just read it.
This kid's in high school.
Yes.
And he's already got more sophisticated film taste than I think maybe anyone I know.
Well, okay. Then.
Here we go. Number 25. And I'm not even going to number them. I'm just going to read them down.
Okay, fine.
Mulholland Drive. Mm-hmm. The Face of Another.
Have you seen that one?
Hiroshi Teshigahara. Don't 1966.
But I trust him.
Godard's Weekend.
Yeah.
Cries and Whispers.
Mm-hmm.
Tarkovsky's Stalker.
Woo.
Theo Angelopoulos, Eternity in a Day. I haven't seen it, but I hear
Angelopoulos is important. Yeah,
he's important. Mishima, Paul Schrader.
Oh, gorgeous.
Persona,
mm-hmm.
Andrei Rublev.
Mm-hmm.
Satan Tango.
Whoa.
The Sacrifice.
Hmm.
Woman in the Dunes.
Whoa.
Scenes from a Marriage.
Hmm.
Hiroshima Mon Amour. Nostalgia. I'll tell you.
I think it's Nostalgia, actually.
Whatever.
Soliadis. Sorry, go on.
I approve of your Tarkovsky thing. Your in-depth Tarkovsky thing, Patrick Devitt. Close Up, Kiarostami.
Oh.
Jean Dielman.
Mm.
Days of Heaven. The Devils. Bergman's Winter Light.
Mm.
Cleo from 5 to 7.
Mm.
Autumn Sonata.
Mm-hmm.
The Mirror.
Mm.
The Seventh Seal.
Mm.
Last Year at Marienbad.
Patrick, have you ever seen Gentlemen Prefer Blondes? It's really fun. You are 100% knife.
I told you he was.
Yes.
This is heavy duty.
Yeah, this is...
I noticed there's no Bresson on this list. And I'm wondering what's wrong.
What about Murnau's Sunrise?
What's wrong? What's
there
wrong?
Are no, in fact, there are no silent films on this
there
list.
There are no silent films. Look, he's in high school. He hasn't been around on the world very long. He's got plenty of time.
He's been watching Tarkovsky and Bergman and Kiarostami.
He's got
Who
time.
Who raised you? Andrew Saris and Molly Haskell?
He's
Jesus.
He's got time to get to the silent film.
All right.
And time to get to the Bresson that you so desperately need in your life. But yeah, you just raised the bar. All right,
sheesh,
other people.
Yeah. Everybody back to F up.
Get with it, all of y'all. Okay. Matthew Ross says, I too like looking at women's couture and how it hangs on the pretty ladies. Also like Dave, I have no desire to wear any of those things myself. Not surprising that Mr. White's wardrobe and my own wardrobe are fairly similar, except I have a few more button-up shirts for work, a few more pairs of footwear. Do I remember structure? How many? Listen, okay, here's what he says. My ex also had a store credit card, along with a dresser and closet full of their colorful clothing. I've had more people talk to me about structure this week. Being like, OMG, structure! Like, yeah, no. This isn't like, oh, we loved it so much. We did not love it.
Well,
you did.
I did. Again, because they had a store credit card. If Gap had had one back then, I would have had that instead. But Structure had one, so I used my Structure card. And for a long time, we had a chair. What were the chairs they used to have there that were the faux, what's-his-face?
Oh, the fake Mies van der Rohe.
Yeah, those chairs. Leathery, you know... Chrome chairs. I remember it because I used to go to the one at North Park Mall in Dallas, and then I moved here, and there was a structure on Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills.
Notice how he said his ex.
That was grounds
his
for dismissal.
Yeah, a structure. I stayed with you, Alonzo Dorelli, in spite of structure.
I knew it wasn't because of.
I stayed with you like Sam Smith. I stayed with you. You're welcome for my incredible love.
Thank you, Dave Wine.
That's right.
Are we done?
We're done. You going to misread a podcast name?
Probably, yeah.
You should not do that.
You shouldn't lose emails. As always, thank you for listening. We appreciate it, and we send you to check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, The Schmoes Know, Dennis, Anyone with Dennis Hensley. And thank you, Dennis, for filling in for me this week and doing a great Q&A with Melanie Mayron and Bob King after the Outfest West Hollywood screening of Slapper, She's French, which I didn't get to go to because I had to teach that night, but I heard it was really fun. Check out the Rotten Tomatoes podcast and Malton on Movies and The Canon, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast. The Brett Easton Ellis podcast is back with new episodes. Also, of course, Film Spotting SVU, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and please leave us a review there. No one has left us a review there since late March.
What's wrong with everyone?
And we need the love, frankly.
What's your problem?
Reviews are how iTunes says, hey, people like this podcast. Let's give it a little more placement on our main podcast page,
yeah,
where there are 10 million billion other podcasts listed because everybody has a podcast.
And 8 million billion of them are about movies.
Exactly. Yeah. So please, help us rise to the top of the heap with some more loving reviews. We appreciate the letters. We appreciate the tweets and the Facebooking and all that stuff. But if you have not gone to iTunes yet.
And
if you have not gone to iTunes yet to leave us a review, please, please, please do that. We'd really appreciate it. You can also stream this program at Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com or on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast, which if you haven't liked yet, please do. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel. I did post a couple more episodes up there. So get off my back, Chuck. You can also join the Linoleum Knife group on Facebook, where our fans
gather. He was right, though.
I know. Yeah. I'm going to get on it.
You're wasting your time.
Where our fans gather to talk about movies. And, of course, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions, comments, your best movie lists, which will, of course, pale next to the one that Patrick sent us, but do your best anyway.
Stop paling.
And, of course, that's also the PayPal address to get our old episodes.
Start PayPaling.
LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. It's been lovely, and we're off this weekend, but we'll be posting this at the normal time. And we will catch you guys next time.
Goodbye.